Imagine this. It's immediately after the 9/11 attacks. You're an agent in the Transportation Security Administration in the United States. You see something that could lead to another terrorist attack, and you report it to your supervisors. What happens next? They fire you. I'm John Kiriakou, and you're watching The Whistleblowers. Today we're talking with TSA whistleblower Robert McLean. Bob is both typical and atypical of many national security whistleblowers. He's typical in the respect that he saw evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, and he said something about it without any regard for what it would do to his career. He blew the whistle because it was the right thing to do. He paid a very heavy price for it, which we'll tell you about in a moment. But he's atypical in that he has proven time and time again that he's literally not afraid of anybody. He's taken on his immediate bosses, and he's taken on senior U.S. government officials all the way up to the Secretary of Homeland Security. He has had A-list attorneys defending him, and he's defended himself, not just in the federal district court, but at the appellate level and all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, more than once. The Department of Homeland Security couldn't silence him, and when they tried, he sued. And when they were forced to take him back, they put him in dead-end jobs, and he sued again. And when they failed to offer a plan to secure pilot doors on American aircraft to prevent another hijacking and another terrorist attack, he invented one himself. He was even given a patent for it by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. So where is Bob now, after fighting Homeland Security for more than half of his career? He's in court again, and he's not giving up. Bob McLean, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, John.
Bob, you and I have known each other for more than a decade. I met you through one of Washington's whistleblower groups while I was going through my own travails after blowing the whistle on the CIA's torture program. I still remember our first meeting. I was depressed and distraught, and you were upbeat and ready for a fight. You're still fighting 10 years later. You began your career at TSA as a federal air marshal, and you took your job very seriously. Tell us how this whole odyssey got started for you in the first place.
Well, after I left the Air Force, I became a Border Patrol agent. And 6 years later, I was hired by the Federal Aviation Administration to be in the first class of post-9/11 special agents. And a few weeks afterwards, we turned into the TSA, and they made us all federal air marshals.
And that's how it started. You were only on the job for about 18 months when you heard of a proposed TSA plan to take federal air marshals off of long-distance nonstop flights in order to save money. This was a dangerous idea, and you said so, but you were rebuffed, so you went to the media. That actually worked, and the plan was withdrawn by the Department of Homeland Security. What made you go to the media rather than to, say, the Inspector General or the Congressional Oversight Committees?
Well, early in the Air Marshal program, there were several pre-9/11 Air Marshals that were telling us that eventually the U.S. is going to install a secondary barrier system between the cockpit and the main cabin, which would 100% eliminate hijackings. And the Israelis had had this system for several decades. And a lot of us didn't really understand that concept of this secondary barrier. But once we started flying these missions and we saw that the only thing between another hijacking and the rest of us on the plane was either a flight attendant standing in front of an unlocked cockpit or a flight attendant spinning around a drink cart perpendicular into the aisle. And we were saying early in 2002, us air marshals, we can't react fast enough to somebody charging that. And often they would put us in positions on the aircraft which would make us almost impossible to even try to jump and react to somebody charging an unlocked cockpit. And worst of all, we would be put in a window or middle seat with passengers in between us and the unlocked cockpit. Mm. So we were constantly like, what's going on here? How are we going to stop this? And then in April of 2003, 4 months before my Supreme Court cited disclosure, the pilots went to the Associated Press and said, this is a disaster waiting to happen without secondary barriers.
The chronology of what happened to you is very complicated, in my view. TSA fired you in 2006 on the grounds that you had disclosed sensitive security information to the media. But sensitive security information is unclassified. You appealed the decision to the Merit Systems Protection Board, which is supposed to protect federal workers, but you lost there in 2008. Then you appealed to the federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and lost there, although that court said that the Merit Systems Protection Board had jurisdiction over your case. The court added that you should have been protected under the Whistleblower Protection Act. In 2009, before the Merit Systems Protection Board, you lost again, and in 2010, an administrative law judge ordered that you be removed from TSA. But you kept fighting. Another appeal in 2011 confirmed your termination from TSA, but then in 2013, a Supreme Court decision resulted in you being granted a new hearing, and you were retroactively reinstated at TSA with back pay and benefits. You were formally declared to be a whistleblower in November 2015. Tell us what it was like going through an experience like that for 7 years. What was it like on you personally? How did your family deal with it? And what gave you the wherewithal to just keep fighting year after year after year?
Well, it was pretty simple. A year after my 2003 disclosure, the 9/11 Commission report confirmed exactly what we had been complaining about. The hijackers simply waited for the pilots to get food trays or to use a laboratory. It's right there on pages 5, 158, 245 of the 9/11 Commission report. The cockpit was not secure, and it still wasn't secure. And they fired me and said that essentially it's a big secret that a cockpit door opens throughout a flight. And this sensitive security information label, it's really damaging because, you know, it is unclassified and it has no controls over it. I mean, an airline janitor can essentially declare something as SSI. But it's really bad because as soon as the TSA puts an SSI marking on a document, that is exempt from Freedom of Information Act requests. So this was just all wrong all of these years, but everybody was telling me that I endangered public safety and what I did was egregious, that I told all the terrorists in the world that our jets are not secure. And so I just kept fighting. My neighbors thought I was crazy. My family thought I was crazy. But it was just the obvious was the obvious. But unfortunately, the public doesn't see it even to this day because we still put flight attendants' bodies in carts to protect unlocked cockpits.
You know, this is an ongoing theme with national security whistleblowers, too, that anytime you make your revelation, they accuse you of endangering the lives of Americans, usually American soldiers. And all you have to do is say, name one American soldier that I've endangered by trying to uphold the Constitution, and they can never answer that. Bob, your troubles were not yet over. In March of 2019, TSA fired you yet again. They said that they were objecting to something that you wrote on an Air Marshal message board. What happened, and where do you stand now?
Yes, I on a secret Facebook used to have secret groups where they were impossible to see, and it was sort of like I went on to a forum where air marshals would communicate, and I simply posted a G-rated photo and text and video links and also media links with regards to the fact that an air marshal who repeatedly couldn't shoot a gun meeting the air marshal standards was repeatedly failed, was even fired for not being able to pass the air marshal firearms examinations. And the examination was actually dumbed down for her and others. And she came back, failed the same test again, but instead of firing her like everybody else did, she ended up exchanging sexual favors with several of the bosses of the agency, one of whom who fired me the first time. And she recently in 2017 got another special award, despite the fact that she was incompetent. And this was a air marshal who didn't know how to shoot on an aircraft and shouldn't have was fired and shouldn't have had the job. So it was a protected disclosure, but the TSA believed that it was rude and had and it was sexual in nature. Therefore, that's the excuse that it fired me for, even though the entire Facebook secret group had racist and violent posts by air marshals who the TSA used as test as witnesses to testify against me in my hearing.
My goodness gracious. We are speaking with TSA whistleblower Bob McLean about his years-long fight with the Department of Homeland Security. We're going to take a short break and come right back. Stay tuned.
Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays, on est en France quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Русофобия оказалась выгодным бизнесом.
Они Украину предали, ограбили и отдали на растерзание американцам. Украину, мою родину.
Эти люди готовились достаточно открыто, финансирование проводилось достаточно широко, и мы знаем всех акторов, кто это финансирование получал.
8 лет двигались ровно в этом направлении, чтобы вот расчеловечить русских и разорвать всякие все связи.
Это результат серьезной работы над историческим сознанием.
Преступление против человечества задокументировано на украинских территориях очень много. И большая часть из них совершена при попустительстве или по прямому приказу нынешнего или прошлого киевского руководства.
Уже они давно вышли из легального поля, давно, значит, действуют другими методами, неконституционными.
Это и есть преступление по нацистскому образцу.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with TSA whistleblower Bob McLean about his experience fighting the Department of Homeland Security. Good to have you back, Bob.
Great to be here with you, John.
Bob, we are now almost 20 years after your initial whistleblower disclosure. That's a very long time, especially in government. But you have never given up despite daunting setbacks along the way. Like most other whistleblowers, the price you've paid has been very high. Your finances are ruined. You face the possibility of losing your home. Your family has been under terrible pressure, but you're back in court again. Tell us about that. What's the latest on your case?
It's gotten insane. I discovered after my Merit Systems Protection Board hearing closed that my administrative judge was a headquarters GS-15, which is generally a grade for a senior mid-level manager, and was a attorney representing the Department of Homeland Security Federal Air Marshals Service during the same years that I was blowing the whistle on the agency, which was confirmed by the Supreme Court. So I filed a complaint with the U.S. Office of Special Counsel about the judge being silent about working for the Federal Air Marshal Service, and also the fact that the Federal Air Marshal Service failed to notify me that the judge had worked for them. So not only this violated numerous ethical standards, but clear violation of several laws and regulations. So now there's another Merit Systems Protection Board proceeding that's happening in Philadelphia. It had to go to Philadelphia because my other judge is in the Washington Regional Office, and I am currently appealing a decision by the Philadelphia Merit Systems Protection Board to a federal appeals court in Washington, D.C., that she improperly failed to give me a hearing on injunctive relief on the fact that both the Department of Homeland Security and my judge were silent about their past history during my disclosures.
Well, this is an ongoing theme in your case, isn't it? It's that you repeatedly have to go to the Merit Systems Protection Board. You repeatedly appear before administrative law judges, not necessarily in courts, so much as judges from the Department of Homeland Security and MSPB, and they don't disclose their conflicts of interest. How do they get away with it, and how have they gotten away with it all these years?
I don't know whether it happened recently in a Chicago case of another federal whistleblower, and the new full board in Washington, D.C., there's a three-member board that's appointed and confirmed by the Senate, appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, where they said absolutely not can a judge have any potential conflicts of interest. So there is hope, but my case is just dragging on forever, John. I was fired. It's going to be in March. It'll be 4 years that I've been fired again. And something that also happened is that under the Trump Homeland Security, they waited to fire me days after the Merit Systems Protection Board full board, the one that I just mentioned of three members, went empty. And a month after the board went empty, the Department of Homeland Security in writing agreed to reinstate me voluntarily with the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, and later reneged on that that agreement. And since then, John, I discovered some egregious actions due to the pile of discovery.
Yeah.
The criminal investigators actually altered documents and that ended up being exhibit.
Act.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a criminal act. You know, you've been at literally every level of the legal community in this case. You've been at the administrative level. You've gone to the federal district court, the federal appellate court. You've been to the Supreme Court. What has the reception been to your case in the legal community in Washington? It's been my own experience that most attorneys won't touch whistleblower cases because they're hard to win. And the whistleblower rarely has the money to pay for attorneys. So what has your experience been?
Well, thankfully, I mean, right out of the gate after the Supreme Court ruled in my favor, they were coming after me in indirect and direct ways. So I was just methodically every day, almost every hour, just memorializing all these crazy things that they were trying to set me up for. And with regards to the legal community, they see me as like a pain in the ass. It's like,
right.
Can't you just settle and go away? We are tired of hearing about the McLean case. Don't come on. And it's funny, as administrations change, they want you to settle more in a new administration than in another. So there's politics at play. People are just so sick. Oh, here comes the McLean whistleblower case again. But you know what? The cockpit is still totally insecure.
Well, that's why I said in the intro to the show that one of the things that's striking about you is that you're not afraid of anybody. You have fought the Bush administration, the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration, and you're going to keep fighting until you have satisfaction. We've said here on this show previously that Washington is full of whistleblower support groups like the Government Accountability Project, the Whistleblower and Source Protection Network, the National Whistleblower Center, the Project on Government Oversight, and so on. Have any of these groups been helpful to you? Have they been able to help advance your case in the courts, or have they served a different purpose?
The Government Accountability Project has been definitely assisting me legally. And then I get good publicity from the National Whistleblower Center and also the Project on Government Oversight. But John, I think the one thing that has saved me and is just destroying the government's case in this whole vendetta against me is I just keep telling the truth and don't deviate from it because they lie, they cheat, they alter documents, they intimidate witnesses. It never ends. So if you just stick to the truth and maintain your integrity, it doesn't matter how many dirty tricks they can play, and they don't stop. And the problem is, John, as you know, there's no accountability for their dirty tricks.
And you've made an important observation here. This is not a partisan issue. It doesn't matter if the Democrats are in the White House or the Republicans are in the White House. They're always going to work to cover for themselves. And if that means sacrificing the whistleblower, they're willing to sacrifice the whistleblower. That's why you have to keep fighting. And I know you. I've known you for a long time. That's why you have kept fighting. Before we wrap things up, I've got to ask you about your invention. This is a legitimate airline security invention for which you've received a patent from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. I think that's remarkable. In fact, that makes some people very wealthy, but that's not been the case with you. Why is your airline security door not on every passenger plane in America right now?
Well, that's because a French company called Safran, S-A-F-R-A-N, they sort of have a monopoly on anything having to deal with the cockpit. So, and of course, nobody thought of inventing a modular cockpit secondary barrier system, but I did. And Safran in there, because most of the airline engineers have no concept in counterterrorism, counter personnel measures. So none of these people ever thought of developing a modular system. Just about everything on a ship, on an aircraft, has to be modular because I mean, this is a moving facility. So I am the only owner of a modular system, and right now it's the law, John. In 2018, it mandated that aircraft now have to have secondary barrier systems, but I'm the only owner of a modular system. So the corporations such as Safran are basically buying out the FAA and mm-hmm. the airlines and to muzzle my invention.
Finally, Bob, what advice would you give others who are considering becoming whistleblowers in light of your own experience? You've not had an easy time. What would you say to others?
Don't do it. It's not worth it. Not worth what happened to my family. I have no regrets myself. That's just my DNA. That's how I'm wired. I can't stand bullies. I can't stand injustice, but you know, 90% of the public isn't like that. So I wouldn't want to wish this on anybody's, on my worst enemy, especially somebody who has a family with small kids, such as you do, John. No, it's not worth it. The American politics, the judicial system just doesn't care about you. You're just a whiner to them. And a lot of judges don't like whistleblower cases mm-hmm. because they get so complex, because there's so much cover up and concealment mm-hmm. and illegalities that go to covering up disclosures of public safety, because this is really embarrassing stuff. So what happens is these cases start to just grow legs and become 20-headed monsters. So judges really, really can't stand us, because once we open up this Pandora's box of wrongdoing, it spills eternally. So that's why there's a disdain for us.
I think you're right, Bob. This is not a decision to be taken lightly. It takes somebody with real wherewithal to be able to take on a government, to take on organizations that have unlimited funds and can bury you in legal proceedings. Well, I'd like to thank our guest, the fearless TSA whistleblower, Robert McLean, and thanks to our viewers for tuning in yet again. In mid-November, the Greek Orthodox Archbishop of Cyprus passed away, and at his funeral, one of the church hierarchs said something that is apropos of all whistleblowers. I believe that it's something we should all aspire to. He said, quote, "He left behind a body of work before which time itself will bow, and he has taught us that humans justify their fleeting passing through this world struggling for the common good," unquote. That's exactly what whistleblowers do. They struggle for the common good. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.